comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet, thank you for being here, and I hope you will enjoy the evening of talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. Our members area is new. Now, we've had a members area since March the 8th, 2008. But we have a new members area, and it is getting rave reviews. You can read some of the comments that people are making about the new members area by clicking on the menu over there on our website where it says Join. Now, just because you click Join doesn't mean you're joining, but the first page that you see has some of the comments that people are making about this new members area. And the comments continue to roll in. People are absolutely wild about the new members area. And that's a good thing. We want it to get better all the time. And if, you know, we find something even better, we'll go to that. But right now, it looks like that this is, we're right on target with this software that we're using for the members area. Also, let me remind you very quickly to subscribe if you haven't. Subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. It's called the K-Files. And the K-Files is, when we say it's free, we're not speaking in Washington, D.C. speak. It's, when we say free, it really is free. So there's really no reason, is there? No, and there's no genius in being in the dark, and there's no reason for you to be in the dark when it's free to move out of the dark. So just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files, and subscribe, and then you will leave the shrooms behind you forever. You know, here on the show, we have all heard Jeff Woolline talk and others talk about their view that many of these things that we see in the skies that we call UFOs are actually living creatures, living entities of some type. And while that may sound a little strange to you if you've never heard that before, it's not a new idea. It was first proposed by my guest this evening in 1958. So that's not a new idea. It may be new to you, but it's not new. It's been around for decades. Trevor James Constable is my guest this evening, and when he talked about these living things in our atmosphere, he called them critters. And not only did he posit that many of what we're calling UFOs are living critters, but he also said that many UFOs are invisible to the naked eye. We'll ask him about all that when we come back on the other side of this break. right, welcome back. Trevor James Constable is a world-renowned author and historian. He also served 31 years at sea, 26 of them as a radio officer in the U.S. Merchant Marines. His first book, They Live in the Sky, in 1958, advanced a theory that was shocking at the time, and even today, for many people, it's shocking. The theory was that UFOs are mainly invisible. He also held that our atmosphere was home of huge, invisible, living creatures, and that these were mutually confused with spacecraft when they became visible. It's our privilege to be able to say, Trevor James Constable, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you for that introduction. Very nice.
Is it surprising to you that a theory you proposed in 1958, I know it could not have been surprising at the time that many people found it shocking. Does it surprise you that there are people today that still find that shocking?
Well, not really, because I've had considerable public exposure with this, as you can imagine, since 1958. And I find that the great mass of the population is just not able to comprehend the central facts that have already been elucidated regarding UFOs, and which have been subtly circulated and openly circulated by many authors in many countries and many tongues. So it doesn't really surprise me anymore that some people are still shocked.
And these days, facts about UFOs are being circulated by some governments. So it's, you know, but, you know, I think this is my observation. Maybe it's accurate and maybe it's not. But it is my observation, and my audience knows, I've talked about it before. So many people have a definition in their minds, and thus a picture in their minds, related to many, many words. So if I use the word alien, they've allowed the popular media to define for them that we're either talking about little green men, which were entirely invented by the media, or we're talking about the little grays. And we may not be talking about either one, but the word alien brings the little gray to their mind. If we say UFO, then they're thinking flying saucer. And while that is a UFO, there are many, many other types of UFOs other than the saucer-shaped. And so I think a lot of times when we say UFO, they are thinking, they've allowed the media to define it for them. They let the media do their thinking. And so they think of flying saucer, some kind of exotic metal. It's a vehicle. It's a craft. The idea that it can be invisible is only slightly plausible to them, you know.
Right.
And I think it's because of that process of allowing the media to do their thinking. But I do think also that there are a great many, many, many people that are waking up to the fact that the media is mostly wrong. Often, this is my opinion, often lying knowingly.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And I think a lot of people are beginning to do their own research and their own study of all things, and I think that includes the topics that we're going to talk about here tonight. There's a young man here in Phoenix by the name of Jeff Woolline who quotes you quite often. He is a videographer, a sky watcher, and when he got started, he initially was thinking flying saucers with extraterrestrials riding inside, etc., etc.
Well, we all started there. That's where I started.
Yeah. These days, though, he's become quite an expert on a feature we have here in the Phoenix area called South Mountain. And he sees these critters coming and going from there all the time, videotapes them coming and going from the mountain all the time. And he's been on the show often talking about these are living beings of some kind. How did you come across that? How did you, I know Jeff was introduced to it by your book and by some other writers. Nobody was introducing you to it. How did you come across it?
Well, the thing is that I read a lot of books prior to taking my first pictures, and I noticed one particular thing that occurred again and again in different parts of the world in such a way that could not be counteracted by any government propaganda, and that was the sightings where objects would appear from out of nowhere, suddenly in the sky, ahead of a pilot or something like that. And the reverse of that was where an object that was under direct observation would disappear while it was under observation. And I thought to myself, you know, these things have gone somewhere. They didn't just disappear. They disappeared to my vision, but not they didn't disappear absolutely. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, the only thing we can do is get some infrared film and see if we can follow these things where they have gone, see if we can follow them just out of the visible range. Because if you look at the visible spectrum, it's a very, very narrow slit in the whole spectrum of radiation, very, 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 very small slit. So if you go out of that slit, then you find that there is another whole range of form there in the infrared and the ultraviolet, and it's populated. And this, you know, sets that serious question. A lot of the things that we are sold and taught in religious institutions and organizations like that, and it tends to be suppressed on that account.
So when you got the infrared film, describe for us what happened with your first few trials of the infrared and your first discoveries.
Well, when we first started out doing this, we didn't really know from hunger about how to do it, and we just had to learn by doing, since no one had done this before. This was the first time it had ever been done, as far as we were aware. So we began going to the desert every weekend, and or on regular intervals, usually twice a month to begin with. And we would go always to the same place, and we would operate at the same time, setting up a sort of a cycle, so to speak. And eventually, we were able to get photos on infrared by that means. It was just that simple. You just had to persist at it. And, of course, you had to adjust your reality to the idea that something you couldn't see was there beside you or on the horizon or otherwise visible, not visible. And the exposures that we made confirmed that these things were there. It was as simple as that.
And then what did they look like?
Well, they looked like they were alive. That's basically what they looked like. And over a period of about 3 months, when we really started scoring with these things, we got enough mutually corroborative photos of these things to be able to draw certain conclusions about them. Chief of them was that they lived in the infrared, so to speak, and that's where you had to go to get them. That they were capable of changing their density to the visible followed from that. That was part of the whole spectrum of UFO sightings all over the world, was that objects just became visible. And similarly, they disappeared while they were under observation. And they had the same thing with radar detection of these objects, that fighter pilots were vectored onto these things on radar intercept and flew right through them and encountered nothing. So that's, that again confirmed that the objects were not of this world, definitely not of this world.
All right. Now, do you see a difference between these critters, as you called them, mm-hmm. and actual flying saucers? Or do you think they are one and the same?
They're not one and the same. They both belong to the invisible. That's where they come from. And we captured both types in the course of the experiments that we ran. And they're accessible today to anybody that wants to put the time in to go and do it. But the fact that there are living things there does not necessarily exclude the fact that there are also ships, constructs, we call them. And they are, you know, essentially machines for traveling. And they may be the vehicle of the occupying intelligence, or they may have crew members in some cases. And you're talking about things that cover an enormous spectrum of happenings. And we got, you know, good examples of both types, so that we were on firm ground in talking about them.
I have some amazing video that was sent to me by one of our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And it was filmed in the desert south of Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago. It's good, sharp video. He was using a professional camera, professional grade camera. But they were seeing these things in the sky every night. And he's got a ranch out south of Phoenix. And so he set up his camera and did as you did. He waited night after night. And then there they were. And this video, they are in the visible range.
Mm-hmm.
But there are these two big orbs of light. And at one point, there may be three or four, but there are two stars of the film. And at one point, they get very, very close, and it's like a stream of... I'm just describing what it looks like. I'm not saying this is what it was. But it's like a stream of like plasma that comes from one over to the other one, and they make sort of a barbell appearance, and then that disappears, and then they develop this notch in the back, so it's not a completely round circle. There's a notch, and they're up there just flying around, and looks like they're playing. Did you ever observe anything similar to that?
No, nothing like that. We've had a pretty wide spectrum of experience with this. This back in the, especially back in the 50s, we've gone back a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And we had several encounters with lights on the desert, but we never actually encountered anything in the visible range. Everything was invisible, and the individuals who were involved in this from the other side told us that we would not get anything of that nature. We would not get anything in the visible spectrum.
Now, what do you mean, the individuals who were involved in this from the other side?
Well, telepathic communication with these entities. That's how it all got started. Mm-hmm. That's where the idea for the infrared film came from. And at this particular time, George Van Tassel was a major figure in the UFO movement, and we went out there several times to his place on the desert, and I finished up by having telepathic contact with one of these unseen individuals that communicated with him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very reluctant to give us anything that would involve us too deeply in their activities, but they said it would be a good idea if we used infrared film, and went from that, which we did. And then after we got the necessary evidence, we completely cut it off, because it was not a good thing to be dealing with individuals that you couldn't see. So
did you find it frightening?
In a sense, yes. And I had the guidance of a very highly skilled occultist who was a book publisher at the time. But he was very, very enlightened on all these things. And he said, it's a good idea if you just dropped the communication with them altogether and said goodbye to all types of psychic activity in connection with this, and took up the study of Dr. Rudolf Steiner's work, the European anthroposophist. I said, so that is really what I did, and that's what led to where I am today. I closed it off, in other words, mm-hmm. to not be interfered with by individuals who may not have my good fortune at heart. That is quite possible.
Stephen Hawking's just gave a talk in which he warned that he didn't think it was a good idea for us to be trying to contact extraterrestrials because we don't know if they have our best interest at heart. And if we don't know that, and they are far advanced of us, we may be inviting disaster. Would you agree with him?
I would, definitely. Definitely I would agree with that. That there's a great deal of activity goes on all the time amongst people who desperately want to have contact with extraterrestrials. And this is, in my case, it's proven to be not a good thing. They have found that the Van Tassel communications, for example, which appeared to be with a very high source, a highly motivated source that was interested in human welfare, that they were maintaining a watch on the Earth and taking care of invading entities and downing their aircraft and so forth, downing their spaceships, and generally maintaining the role of guardians of mankind. And this has proved out to be basically true, because now devices have come on the market that allow an individual to take a telescopic view up into the upper atmosphere, and you'll find just about every night there's a battle going on up there, and it's a continuous thing. It's not nothing to be laughed at all.
All right, we have to step away for a break here in about 8 seconds. When we come back, I want to pick up right there and talk about these battles in the sky. And we've talked about those before here on the show. We'll be back with Trevor James Constable right after this. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Trevor James Constable, and we're talking about his pioneering theory. It's been around since 1958 and is still considered to be edge theory, edge information. But we're talking about this theory about there being UFOs and large living critters that are invisible in our atmosphere. And when we went away for break, you were just mentioning, Trevor, the battles that are going on up in the upper reaches, maybe beyond the atmosphere, upper reaches of the atmosphere, maybe just beyond it, in space. And people are seeing these using night vision goggles.
That's right.
Ed Grimsley has made that very, very well-known and very popular. He may or may not be the first person to notice it, probably not, but he certainly has made it very, very popular by going around the country and holding sky watches and allowing people to look through his night vision.
Right.
I want to go back just a half a step before we move back forward, and you were talking about you had decided to break off psychic contact with these beings. Did you ever experience any negative results from having contact with them?
No, I never did. But as a result of becoming sensitive, as a result of the work I was doing on the desert and certain exercises, that I was given by my teacher, I did become hypersensitive, and it became very difficult for me to deal with that in the ordinary business life, because I was just too sensitive to be around people, and it became difficult. I was glad to get out of it on that account.
All right. Now, let me step back just a little bit further than that and ask you this. You're originally from New Zealand.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever see any UFOs or phenomena such as that when you were in New Zealand?
No, not at all. That long predated my encounters with UFOs. It far predated it.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't get involved with the UFO investigations or research until you got here to the United States?
I was here, and I had been naturalized and everything before this broke.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So what was it that first got you interested in looking at and for UFOs?
Well, my friend, he's dead now. He was the man who founded the Morrow's Nut House retail chain in this country, Howard B. Spud Morrow. And he got interested in it, and he said, "You ought to come out to the desert with me some weekend." He said, "We'll fly out in my airplane, and you can meet Van Tassel and go down under his rock and go through the whole thing." That's how I got started in it, through Spud Morrow. And, you know, it was very fascinating to me at that time. And, of course, the contacts that Van Tassel had were very, very convincing in terms of their content and the particular mode in which they were delivered, you know, in the chamber under the rock where he held those seances. But the individuals who came through him from the other side were obviously of a very high order, very high grade, and they spoke with great authority and conviction, and they were really, it was really like having Orson Welles present, doing all your writing. They were very powerful people, and they gave Van Tassel a great deal of information, which has subsequently disappeared. I don't know what's happened to it. And they told him that you know, they maintained this watch on the planet to keep the invaders away, and that's where I got that. And they subsequently turned out to be true, that is true. That now you can see it thanks to that gentleman you mentioned that has his night vision goggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ed Grimsley.
Ed Grimsley.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now you know, something occurred to me as you were speaking. There are people who are very, very critical of information that comes from psychic sources, and understandably, because, you know, it's maybe this person is being genuine with you, and maybe they're not.
Right.
And that was always a problem, even for the biblical prophets. There were masses of people that said, he's just out of his head, and they didn't know, you know, whether it was true information or not at the time.
Right.
But, you know, what occurred to me was, if you took a radio back 200 years, just 200 years, that's a blink of an eye.
That's
just
right.
Go back 200 years with a modern radio, if you could take one back and still have it work, turn it on and let people listen, they would assume they were hearing voices from the other side.
Yeah.
They would assume it's something spirit speaking to them.
That's right.
Or they would assume that it's witchcraft and magic.
Right. They'd probably kill the person that had the radio.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we've progressed ever so slowly, but we've progressed to the point that no one today that hears a radio thinks that there's anything magical or ghostly or psychic about it. But the other thing that occurred to me was, if you turn the switch off on the radio, you hear nothing.
Yeah.
But everything you were just hearing is still coming into that radio.
Right.
You're just not tuned into it.
That is correct.
So the voices are all still going on, and in the inaudible range.
Right.
And that's very much like what you're talking about with the visible and invisible range, and these things are still there whether you can see them or not.
That is correct. That's true. No doubt about it. And I didn't really start to progress personally until I cut off that communication and got into studying Rudolf Steiner's work, which is highly scientific and very advanced, and got into doing things with that knowledge that had not been done before, including building a system of rain engineering, which I still currently have.
Yeah, the etheric rain. I want us to get into that in just a little bit, but I got a question or two yet about these critters. You were able to see them using infrared, and of course, right. We now have the Mexican Air Force has released a video where they videotaped 11 UFOs that they couldn't see, but they videotaped them with infrared.
Right. That is correct.
I just point out that sort of adds confirmation to everything that you had already said. So you now have a government that is confirming that it's true.
Yeah.
What did you find out about these critters, if anything? Are they terrestrial, or did they come here from somewhere else? What do you know about them?
Well, from what you might call the opposite polarity to what we live in. I have a picture in front of me right now where I have maybe 18 or 20 of these things above the desert floor, and they're just cruising along there in a gigantic cloud like a bunch of fish. But you can't see them. The infrared film can see them, but that's, we've got lots of pictures of that.
Mm-hmm.
These are not particularly intelligent individuals, I wouldn't think. Although there are some that are intelligent, and the ships that are in the same polarity. But you have to switch the polarity so that you can see them. And then you can, when they learn to do this, you'll have UFOs all over the place. They'll be everywhere. People will be reporting them everywhere, instead of just one lone individual going out in the desert and getting them, and trying to convince the world that he's done something important.
But do you think? Let's talk about the vehicles that are invisible. Are the actual UFOs and not the critters? Do you think they are terrestrial, but just in another polarity, or do you think they are extraterrestrial?
Well, I think they're extraterrestrial. I don't think there's any doubt about that. That they come from other dimensions, so to speak. And I have photographs that show exactly how they're propelled and which allow conclusions to be reached about the propulsion of those things, and they're obviously not of our dimension at all, but they have access to it, obviously, just like we have access to earlier methods of communication to our own.
All right, let's move to the development of something you call etheric rain. In a way, that it sort of stemmed from all of this study about UFOs and so forth, in that you got away from the psychic connection and you began to study some books by others who were doing some scientific study.
Right. Rudolf Steiner and others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So tell us about the development of the etheric rain. What is that?
Well, the individual who originally set this in train was the late Dr. Wilhelm Reich, R-E-I-C-H, M-D. And he was Sigmund Freud's first clinical assistant in the course of his career, and subsequently became an independent investigator of what he found as a psychiatrist, psychoanalyst. And Dr. Reich found that the energy of life itself manifested in the form of what he called orgone energy, O-R-G-O-N-E, orgone energy. And he developed the basic facts about orgone energy at his laboratory in Maine, and developed methods of using it in therapy on certain diseases that it was very effective on. And he was victimized, of course, by big medicine at the time, and died in a federal prison, if you can believe it. Died in a federal prison in 1987. And this was really a terrible thing that this happened to him. But among his inventions was the Cloud Buster, which was a simple tubular device for organizing this orgone energy into a beam and shot it out into the atmosphere. And you could, by maneuvering this and controlling it, you could get the energy to build up in its potential. And when its potential built up, it attracted moisture from the atmosphere. And Reich himself was able to get rain for the berry farmers in Maine, where his laboratory was. He got paid for that.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll pick up there talking about etheric rain when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking to Trevor James Constable, and we've just started talking about etheric rain and this invention by Wilhelm Reich. And he was able to cause it to rain using this device. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. And I've done that many times since.
So you have the device.
Oh, yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
We carry the device now in a greatly truncated form on airplanes, and it works even better up there. But I was, for many years, for 14 years, in fact, I was on Matson's Maui, which is a container ship between here and Honolulu, and found out how to use this device properly and to generate rain on the moving ship. Then we transferred that to an airplane. Found it worked fine on an airplane. You don't have any chemicals and no electric power, and it rains like hell.
So, do you do this commercially now?
Well, we try to, and people just don't accept it. They won't accept that you can do it. They think you have to burn something or throw something into the atmosphere to get it to rain, but that isn't true. You're using the same energy that the UFOs use, and it's just that simple. The geometric device that you use is geometrically powered, and you can see the stuff build up in front of you. I have miles and miles of time-lapse film and time-lapse tape that are made out on the Pacific with this, and I made over 300 crossings of the Pacific doing this, and so I know whereof I'm speaking.
All right. Now, this footage that you've got, is it available on the internet anywhere?
No, not that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I know of. But you could get it from the company in Singapore that we formed. You can write to them and get that. Get a half hour videotape that shows the whole process.
What is the name of the company?
The name of the company is AEREO, Aereo.
Mm-hmm. And it's in Singapore.
In Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where I have their address here, but I'll look it up and then give it to you later if I can find it.
Now, you said this uses the same energy that the UFOs are using.
That's right.
Now, there are lots of reports of UFOs where the sky is clear, then all of a sudden there's this buildup of a cloud, and from this cloud emerges a UFO. Is that because of the Oregon energy?
It quite possibly could be, because they have obviously learned complete mastery of the Oregon energy. There's no doubt about that. And anybody that's followed the UFO developments would be aware of that, and particularly if they had also studied Dr. Reich's material. It would be obvious that this is what it was. And, you know, the UFOs have shown all along marked ability to surround themselves with clouds. This is a common thing in ufology.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are some even some biblical references that, if you read the description, that's what it sounds like they're describing.
That's right. That's
yeah.
Right. Well, if you are on a ship, we'll say, and you're coming to the west, you're coming to California, and you turn one of these devices on, that is to say, you orientate it correctly, you will block the east to west flow completely, and you'll see an enormous mass of black cloud come up out of nowhere, just like that. And I have videotape of this, so you can accept it as being so.
Now, is the energy that is put off by this in any way harmful to human health?
No, not at all. No. Well, I mean, if it gets under some of the rain that's generated, that could be, you know, difficult for them. But not the energy itself is the energy of life, and it is not in any way adverse to human life, not at all.
Over the years, you no doubt have read critics who have said there's no such thing as Oregon energy. But obviously, if you have a device that you turn on and it causes rain, something is happening there. What would you say about the physicists that say there's no such thing as Oregon energy?
Well, there is no explanation for ignorance other than the inertia of the person involved, and that's the case with Dr. Reich's discoveries. I mean, they just simply don't know, and they have nothing comparable to it in physics at the present time. Nothing at all. It's the first incoming of the new physics that's going to take over the whole world before the century is out. I'm sure of that.
There's a brand new the theory's been around for a while, but there's a brand new research group or a report from a research group that is saying that they have evidence that the speed of light is not a constant.
Mm-hmm.
And that it has in fact slowed down massively over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the 300 years or so where people have been trying to measure the speed of light, it has slowed down, according to them, some 7%.
Uh-huh.
Now, with that being the case, it means that all the methods by which they date the universe and the methods by which they calculate distance of galaxies from each other and the methods by which they calculate how fast those galaxies are moving away from or toward each other, all of those are absolutely wrong if the speed of light is not a constant.
That's right. That is right. But I don't get into anything as abstruse as the speed of light.
The reason I bring it up is this is just about to turn physics on its head.
Yeah.
These are the same folks that are telling us there's no such thing as orgon energy.
That's right. That is correct. Yeah, that is absolutely so. An individual that tells you that there's no such thing as orgone energy is just not aware of transcendental things that have happened in the past 50 years. Very, 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 very derelict in being that ignorant and in the scientific professions.
After all these years of making discoveries and proposing a theory that it was so edge at the time that it's still edge today, in 1958, when you proposed it. After all these years, what would you say is the most amazing and important discovery that you've made?
Well, there's a number of them. to have photographed in the infrared the invisible living organisms and also the craft, that is a considerable discovery in itself. But that's really only a small thing, really. To have been able to take Dr. Reich's work and move it onto an airplane so that it will make rain virtually anywhere, that is a major discovery, a major finding. And they don't come near me. The government doesn't come near me. The military doesn't come near me. They don't want to know because they'd have to throw out everything they're using. That's the position they're in.
Have they ever threatened you?
No. I've never had any contact at all with the government, other than back in the 50s, I had a group of young men in the Air Force, in the civilian end of the Air Force, who were working in Washington, and they got interested in what I had revealed in my very first book, which was They Live in the Sky, came out in 1958. And they were busy working in 1959 and 60 on the development of a camera for recording in the infrared and in the ultraviolet. And this eventually came about in the 90s, around 1995, when it was up on a spacecraft above the Earth. And they got the same UFOs that I photographed from the ground.
All right, Trevor, we have to step away for a break. Folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Trevor James Constable. And as you know, folks, if you miss a single second of the Kevin Smith Show, you're going to miss a universe of information. And if you miss that first hour, you've missed a universe or two of information. My sympathy to you and condolences for whatever it is that kept you away. But we're glad you're here now, if you are just now joining us in this second hour. We want you to have the opportunity to participate in the show and to personally be able to talk with Mr. Constable. And so what we're going to do is open up the telephone lines for you. And the telephone lines are now open. The telephone numbers are, and you can call this number from anywhere in the world. It will work anywhere. It is 623-444-5889. Now, if you're in the USA or Canada, you can call us toll-free if you need to. If you don't have to call us toll-free, use the main number. But if you need to call us toll-free, it is 888-223-4599. if you are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number for you, but I do have the flash message option just for you. So you go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, you will see the link that says flash message. All right? And so you can send us a flash message. I will read it here on the air, and we'll talk about it, so long as it's relevant to our show and our topic tonight. 623-444-5889. The phone lines are open, and we invite you to call with your questions or comments for Trevor James Constable. Let me explore with you for just a moment, Trevor, the something we haven't talked about much. In 1958, there was a different society, there was a different culture, a different climate, even in the news, in the media. And that's when you first proposed what you have about the UFOs and about the critters. Comparing that to where we've come today, how would you say you are being responded to today that would be different from 58?
You're breaking up badly on this. I'm not quite sure I got the full drift of what you were saying. The line is bad, or I'm not getting it correctly.
Okay, well, let me make a slight adjustment and try this again. If you compare the way people responded to your theory in 1958 and compare it to now, what's the difference in how they respond to your observations?
Well, now they more or less accept that there are living creatures there. Lots of people come to me and say that they believe that to be the case, and that that was a bold step forward. But aside from that, there's nothing really radically different to the way they behave. In 1958, it was a question of coming up against the preconception that you were dealing entirely in the UFOs with ships from other planets with men in them. And that has really undergone a drastic downgrading since that time. That much I have noticed.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hello, Kevin and Trevor. This is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello.
Rusty.
Trevor, these beings, where do you think they exactly came from?
I don't think they're from anywhere. I think they're where they belong right now.
You think they've been there
for thousands of years?
Man's been here? Or?
I didn't get that. This is a bad line that he's got here. I'm not able to get it.
Well, the reason you didn't get it is both of you were talking at the same time, so you canceled each other out. What he asked was, do you think they've always been here since man has been here?
Oh, they've been here for thousands of years. There's no question about that. I deal with that in my current book, The Cosmic Pulse of Life. In dealing with the paintings on the walls of the caves in Cantabrian Spain, where, Paleolithic man drew this art, and it's perfectly representational for the animals and that are there, and there's also UFOs drawn on the walls. So that's how long it's been around. They're just, we're in organisms that were more primitively organized and therefore saw differently. That's all.
Yeah.
They don't they haven't come from anywhere else in response to atomic energy or anything like that, not in my opinion.
Okay. What do you think these entities you've discovered have to do with 2012?
I didn't get that.
What do you think these entities have to do, if anything, with 2012?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't believe so.
Okay.
They're getting quite a thing going with that 2012.
Yeah. Okay, Rusty, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 is the number to call. It is open. The flash line is also open. And somehow, some way, we'll get that telephone ringer cut off. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, good evening, Kevin. This is Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. I was looking on your guest's website, and I seen, I don't know if it's him, looking through something. It doesn't quite look like a telescope. It's two round tubes with like a gold copper thing at the one end, and he's standing beside it. Is that a telescope, or what is that?
I couldn't read that. It's really bad.
All right. Tell you what, Trevor, we're going to hang up. We'll call you back.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
Yeah. All right. Terry, you just hang on, all right?
Sure.
All right. And we will call Trevor back.
Yes.
Okay.
Hello.
We've got you on the same line, but maybe it's a better connection. Okay, he wants to know, on your website, there is a picture of you standing next to something that looks like a telescope.
Like
but
a telescope.
Yeah, is it a telescope?
No, that is a rain gun that was used in some scientific work that we did several years ago.
What kind of gun?
Rain.
It's a rain gun for engineering rain.
Yeah. Do you believe, I got to know what the question is. I've heard the reason for chemtrails that the military are doing is because they're trying to kill off or whatever these things are running around in our atmosphere. Do you believe that's true, or do you have any knowledge about that? And I'll open the lines for everybody else.
No, I don't have any accurate information on the chemtrails. None at all. Nothing that will stand up. Let's put it that way.
It would seem that none of these critters have ever posed any kind of a problem for air travel or. Haven't posed any health problems for humans here on Earth, or maybe I just don't know about it. What do you think?
Well, I didn't really read that very good either. There's a very bad line, young man. You'll have to do something about it.
There's nothing I can do about it. It's somewhere between me and you. Okay, we hear you just fine. What about the these critters? Have they ever posed any kind of a problem for air travel or any kind of a health problem for humans?
No, I don't think so. I think the Air Force fighters have repeatedly many times flown right through them without any feeling anything or seeing anything happen. They've been vectored onto them and they've flown right through them. This is, part of most pilots' lives anymore. And they're just not of the same order of matter as ours.
Well, maybe they're not matter at all. Maybe they're just energy.
I don't think so. Not just energy.
No.
But they have that form. That's what's difficult to understand, is that they have form. And if you saw these pictures I have here of flux of them flying through the air, you'd know that they're a natural phenomenon and nothing to be concerned about. Until you got up amongst them, perhaps you might. You might bring one of them down or cut it up or something like that, but it's not going to be a decisive encounter, not for you or for it will be for him, but not for you. You go right through it.
If you were to bring one of them down, would he become visible?
Yes, that's part of the whole fabric of ufology, is these falls of gelatinous material in different parts of the world. There are many and many of instances of this taking place. And it disintegrates very quickly. They have tried to analyze it, to get it into bottles and so forth, and get it analyzed, but it just goes right through the bottle, and they finish up with nothing. So it has happened that they have fallen to the earth and you know, appear as jelly.
Well, that then would bring up this question. On the rare occasion when these things are visible, would that perhaps indicate that it's a critter that is ill and not able to maintain his invisibility?
Well, the thing is that when they become encountering something that causes them to die, we'll say that's what it is, because when the mass of jelly falls to the earth, it's essentially inert, and they try to scoop it up and so forth and get it analyzed. It goes back to its natural state before they can completely gather it. Before they can even when they get it into test tubes and things like that, it goes right through the test tube and they have nothing. So it indicates that they are in the process of dying. They have changed polarity.
Okay, so then those that do become visible perhaps are ill. Would that be the case?
What was that? I didn't get it.
Those that become visible then would be perhaps ill.
I didn't get that last word.
Somebody is messing with your phone, because we can hear you just fine, but they're disrupting the signal between here and you.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Mike from Kentucky.
Speak up good and loud for us, Mike. You're 100 miles away.
Okay, I'm doing about the best I can do here tonight.
Somebody's messing with us, Mike.
I think they are, because your show keeps stopping and starting.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, would you say then, let me explain. I just got in here. I've been to a grandchild's softball game, so I just got in. Would you say that these creatures are moving around and using the argon in the atmosphere as a fish would use a sea or a river?
I didn't get it's not intelligible.
The answer's yes. He answered that earlier. He said they were swimming through the clouds.
Yes, then that's what. Would you say that they could be made up of the same type of material that so-called angel hair is of UFOs?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
Angel's hair is probably from the same source.
Gotcha.
It was prolific in the early days of ufology.
Yes. All right, you keep up the good work, Trevor. I really enjoyed your work. We'll keep listening to it.
All right, thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Yeah, it seems to be rather apparent that somebody has decided that we're just going to have difficulties with the telephones tonight. So be that as it may, we're going to rock on. Look, what I was asking earlier is, when these things, if they're living critters, they have a life cycle, and at some point they die. But when they become visible to us, would that indicate that perhaps that's one of the critters that is in the process of dying?
I didn't get that.
All right. Okay, we're going to hang up again, and we're going to get through this. The morons that are messing with us can make it uncomfortable. One thing they cannot do is keep us from being able to make this show happen. Caller, if you'll hang on just a minute, we are going to attempt to get Mr. Constable back on the telephone here and see if we can get around these morons that are trying to keep us from broadcasting. Are you back with us, Trevor?
I'm back.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you, but you're still broken up, let's put it
that way. Yeah, somebody's messing with us. It was fine for the first hour. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin from Beaverton.
All right, Kevin, speak up good and loud for us right into your telephone.
Trevor, I was wondering if one of those critters landed on an object or an object went through it while an object is in the critter, would that object be cloaked?
Well, that's a good question. If an airplane flies into the midst of a critter that's invisible, does the airplane become invisible?
No. The airplane stays in this vibration. It doesn't affect the airplane at all. There's no sensation whatever of encountering a large object or anything like that. And that situation down in Mexico that you referred to, they had the business of going into one of them there and felt nothing. But they saw on the infrared detection system that they had encountered it, but they didn't give any indication of that aboard the airplane.
All right, Kevin, you have another question or comment?
I recall in the past where like blobs have washed up on beaches. I wonder if those are the dyed forms of those critters.
Okay, these big blobs that have washed up on beaches, Trevor, blobs of some kind of tissue, would that be the carcasses of these creatures?
It's quite possible that would be true. They're very large, and I deal with one of those in the Cosmic Pulse of Life down in Tasmania. It washed up on the shore of the Tasmanian island, and it had been washing in and out on the tide for a couple of years, apparently, without being investigated. And they tried to cut it with an axe and couldn't do that. And, they put the whole island under security and got people out of there, and that was the end of it. And nothing more was heard of it. It was swallowed into the Australian government security system. But there have been those big things like that, 40 feet across.
What do you think it was?
Well, I don't know, because I wasn't there and I haven't seen it or anything like that. I'm only going on people's descriptions of what they saw and what found its way into the media and this connection. But these types of things are quite common, apparently, down around Tasmania, and that's not the only one that's been seen. That's the only one that's been described to date.
Okay. All right, let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Perry from San Luis Obispo, California.
Hello, Perry.
Hello. Trevor, I don't mean to change the subject so abruptly, but when you mentioned this rain stick kind of, or rain gun kind of thing, I kept telling everybody, I want one of them. I want to buy some land in the desert and take one of those rain sticks and bring some rain down so I can garden. How much do they cost?
We don't sell these devices at all. the simple reason that they're so simple that anybody that got hold of one would be able to fabricate his own. It's in the tuning of them that the expense is to be found, because you have to hire a sensitive to really tune them. And when you're dealing with the etheric world, it is a world in which there is no attenuation of anything by distance. There's no here and no there, in other words. Everything is tuning. So they're not for sale, and I don't anticipate they will be for sale in the next 10 years anyway.
Okay.
Well, how do you feel about the practical use, like I just mentioned? Does that fit in with the a good purpose?
Well, we are available to do that type of work anywhere where it's feasible. We just don't have any customers that are interested in getting rid of the drought. The governments in particular are driven by high officials in other governments who tell them what to do, and they get frightened when the question of dealing with the drought comes up. They think it's great to begin with when they first hear of it, or when Mr. Wu or myself go to see them and say, you know, you can do this without any chemicals or electric power. They get frightened and they go back to their rulers, who are hidden people. They're the oligarchy of the world, so to speak. And the oligarchy definitely doesn't want rain coming down. The oligarchy wants drought. They are determined to have a world drought. And we are against them, so we don't get any business. That's the way it's worked out.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Perry. Thank you for the call. All right, we're just seconds away from break, and what we're going to do, Trevor, during the break is call you again.
Okay.
What we're doing is rerouting the phone systems, and we'll see if we can get around the morons. All right, folks, we will be back right after this. Welcome back. We reconnected with our guest, Trevor James Constable, and I just commented to him during the break, did you notice none of those problems started? None of those telephone problems began until we started talking about the etheric rain. Interesting, interesting, interesting. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi, and hello to Trevor.
Yes, hello.
Hi. I'm just trying to get a handle on what you're talking about. So you're talking about infrared signatures, which is basically heat. But at the same time, when you move towards them, you can go through them. So what that implies is that you get a heat signature, but it's not at the normal density that we're used to. It's some other density. Is that right?
That is correct. That is correct.
Well, how the heck would that work?
Well, there are things in the visible light range that are at different densities.
The whole thing requires a complete shift in your own way of looking at things. You get used to it after a while. But these objects are at a different frequency, so to speak, and they can change frequency just like you turn the switch on a radio and change the channel. It's just that simple for them.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to get a handle on is how can something that's basically, not physical, still give off heat? Like, how does that work?
Something that's not physical gives off heat.
Yeah, but Trevor, you're not saying they're not physical. You didn't say that these critters are not physical. You said that they are at a different vibration level.
Yeah, that's right. It's a different vibration altogether. That you access them through the infrared. Probably because you're getting it down from the ultraviolet. The infrared is a harmonic of the ultraviolet. That's probably what accounts for that. What those young guys in the Pentagon that called me back in the late 50s about all this, that's what they were working on, was getting a recorder made that would respond to the ultraviolet and produce an ultraviolet tape, which they were successful in doing. I guess it cost over $1 million to do it. Getting the lenses organized and all that, and endless experiments to make sure that it functioned well. But then when they put it on the satellite, they could see things on the infrared scope, on the ultraviolet scope, that it definitely couldn't see with the physical eyes of the astronauts on the ship. No doubt about that. Now, that tape is in the public domain, by the way, if you want to see it.
John, are you familiar with the famous tether experiment that NASA did?
That is right. That's right, the tether experiment.
Yeah, all of those things that they later said, that's ice crystals, all of those were invisible to the astronauts' eyes. They were only being picked up by the infrared camera.
That's right. The thing is that they were being picked up by the camera and sent down to Houston, where they were visible as if they were solid objects down in Houston. And Houston sent up to the astronauts to ask them what they could see out of the ship, and they said, we can't see anything, just normal space debris and that sort of thing. And there were probably 30 or 40 of these things floating around the tether at that time that we could see. So that's how that worked, that they could see it down on the Houston place there where they got the communications from the satellite. They could see it there, no doubt about it. And they asked the astronauts what they could see, wanting to find out if it was valid to the eyesight, and of course it wasn't.
Hi, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I got one more question here.
Okay.
So what I'm getting from what Trevor is saying is actually what you look towards is the infrared, which is a much higher energy level, and there's a vector down that turns into heat at the infrared, but it actually originates at the ultraviolet level. Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah, the tape machine that recorded all this was an ultraviolet tape recorder. That is to say, it reacted to ultraviolet radiation. That's how that worked. It wasn't the infrared that it was being recorded. It was the ultraviolet. But that is covered by the fact that the infrared and the ultraviolet are harmonics of each other.
All right. John, thank you for the call.
Mm-hmm.
623-444-5889 is the worldwide telephone number for the Kevin Smith Show. You can call us from anywhere on planet Earth that way. Or if you're in the USA or Canada, you can call us on the toll-free line if you need to, 888-223-4599. Outside the USA, outside of Canada, you can use our flash message feature if you don't want to make it the international long-distance call. All right, from the United Kingdom, we have a flash message that says, "Hi, Kevin, thanks for a great show. The concept of another dimension is difficult to understand. If these objects are invisible to us, are we also invisible to them? Also, when photographs are taken of these creatures and objects, why are no other things visible like trees and buildings that belong to that other dimension?" Well, I'm going to give my observation, and then we'll ask Trevor for his. My understanding of what Trevor has told us is not that they're in another dimension. They're in our dimension, but they are not in our visible light range. They live beyond our visible light range. So if you use an instrument that can see in infrared, which is beyond visible light, you can see them existing right there in the infrared range. Am I correct? Are you with us, Trevor?
I'm with you, but I couldn't really get what you're driving at there because of this corruption of the audio. Really?
Well, you're not saying that these things are in another dimension. You're saying they're in a different range of light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, let's look at a flash message, this one from Puerto Rico, from Leonardo. "Hi, Kevin, good show tonight. Some years ago in the Pacific West, there rained a jello-like clear substance that covered everything. Dogs and cats died and some people got sick. Would those rains have anything to do with your machine to make rain?" And I'm adding something here because I need to explain this. He's asking, is it possible that when this jello-like substance rained in the Pacific West and it caused dogs and cats to die and some people got sick, is it possible that your rain machine, your etheric rain, somehow interacted with these critters in making rain, and did it kill the critters as it made the rain and cause them to fall to the earth?
I can't answer that because I don't know. I just don't know. I don't think so, but that's as far as I can go with that.
All right. 623-444-5889 is our telephone number. The lines are open. If you have a question or a comment for Trevor James Constable, this is your opportunity to speak with him personally. All right. 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599 if you need to call me toll free. Trevor, these critters, this flash message that I just read, where he talks about this jello-like substance falling like rain, dogs and cats died, some people got sick, would this indicate that these critters are toxic to us?
It may be, but I can't answer definitely for sure. I have no evidence that that's true, other than what you're telling me. So I'm not qualified to hold an opinion on it, really.
If you had to speculate, would you speculate that they are or are not toxic to us?
I would doubt that they're toxic. I would doubt that, because I'd probably be dead if they were.
Okay, now, Jose Escamilla presented video to the world several years ago, introducing us to pictures of what he calls rods, moving so fast that normal cameras don't catch them, and the human eye doesn't catch them. I know that's not exactly it's not the same as what you're talking about, but did you ever capture on film anything like those rods?
No, we never did. We never did. Never did get anything like Jose Escamilla's rods, never. But we were able to recognize that they were from that general fabric of phenomena that we're talking about when we talk about the things that we recorded with our equipment, which was not anything like Jose's equipment, which was really super fast ultraviolet video.
All right, now the cameras that you used, were they these pictures of these critters, were they still pictures or were they film, moving film?
We got some film. We got 100 feet of film that was pretty astonishing, and some of that has survived. And you will see, there's a typical section of it has been presented in Cosmic Pulse of Life, where you can look at it and study it, and you'll see that these objects change form, shape, and position in between the frames of a 24 frame a second camera. They're amazingly fast.
All right, we're going to step away for a brief break, and we'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Trevor James Constable. And we've been, since we first mentioned etheric rain, we've been fighting morons who have been disrupting the telephones. But in any event, we are here, and Trevor is here. And we have pressed on. Let me give the telephone numbers. We're on final approach. That means if you plan to call and talk with Trevor, you must do so right now. 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. Trevor, are you with me? Well, apparently we have lost Trevor. We have lost, they've cut our signal. And so there's nobody at this time on this planet hearing anything I'm saying at this moment. And that's tragic for freedom, but there you have it. What they've done is killed the internet connection. Etheric rain, you know, the things where they want silence, they always make it visible, don't they? Where they don't want you to know about something, they make it quite clear they don't want you to know that. Okay, but by doing that, these morons, what they do is they signal that what this guy is saying is important, and what this guy is saying is not only important, but it's accurate. And so I'll tell you what we're going to do now is try to get Trevor back online after this moronic interruption, and let's see if we can finish out the show with him here. Okay, well, even though our stuff is showing that the telephones are back up. They are not. So when these guys do this, whenever they step in and kill a signal, they signal to everyone that's listening, this is important, folks. You should pay attention to this. This guy's not only telling you something we don't want you to hear, he's accurate. And you know, they achieve the exact opposite of their purpose. Their purpose is to keep you from knowing about it, and all it does is throw gasoline on the fire. All right? And, you know, they throw gasoline on the fire and cause everyone to look at what they were trying to keep you from looking at. And that's why I say they're morons. They're also enemies of the Constitution. They are enemies of the state, because our state is founded on the Constitution, even though we have people in charge right now, many people in charge, not just one or two, who are enemies of the Constitution. They are definitely enemies of the Constitution. And but they are elected officials. Not all elected officials are enemies of the Constitution, but a great many of them are. And these morons are working for them. And they are enemies of freedom, enemies of the Constitution of the United States of America. And the reason I harp on that is because I want them to listen. I know they're listening, and I want them to listen, and I want them to understand that I'm highlighting them for future reference. They can make me disappear, but they can't make this disappear. It will always be alive in your minds. And sooner or later, when people have had enough of this, when they've had enough of heavy-handed enemies of the Constitution wearing government suits, stepping on their throats, they'll rise up. And when they do rise up, you morons are going to be taken out. And, you know, keep doing what you're doing. You're ensuring your fate. You are ensuring your fate. So keep doing what you're doing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I wish this sort of thing didn't happen, but it does. And for those of you who think, boy, someday I want to go to the United States because that's the freest people on earth, remember this moment. Remember this moment. There was a time in history when that was a true statement. But remember this moment before you make a mistake. I love my country. My country is the United States of America. That country exists solely because of the Constitution. When you take the Constitution away, there is no United States of America. I love my country. My country has a constitution. Unfortunately, many of the morons that we have elected and sent to Washington have no allegiance to that constitution. Some do, but many don't. And that is unfortunate. Unfortunate indeed. Well, etheric rain must be real. Etheric rain must be very effective, and what he says about it must be very accurate. Otherwise, they would not have stepped in to make sure that you didn't get to hear it. You're getting to hear it now. The only way you're getting to hear it is because we have listened to latest show and watched latest show. And so you're getting to hear and see the end of the show. Remember this moment and remember etheric rain. It has to be important. It has to be real, or there would not have been this interruption. Now, I guarantee you, what they've done is they have cut the internet service. The internet service just went away. we're not broadcasting live. Nobody's seeing and nobody's hearing us live. They made that go away, and they can do that. And by the way, under the new laws that have been passed, the president can actually seize control of the entire internet here in the United States for up to 4 months. As I said, remember the moment. Remember the moment. And somewhere out there in the future, I am absolutely confident freedom will return. It's gone now, but freedom will return sometime in the future. Meaning, of course, that those who are doing these sort of things now will face severe, severe repercussions in the future. My guest tomorrow night is going to be Robert Hastings and Lieutenant Colonel Robert Salas. And I think we're going to have a very interesting show if the enemies of freedom allow you to hear it. I hope you'll tune in. I hope you'll be a part of that show. And even if it's frustrating because we get interrupted, remember, we only get interrupted because we are right. That's why we get interrupted. It's frustrating for you, the listener. It's frustrating for me. But it does not stop the truth from getting out there, does it? So be sure you're here. Be sure you have all your friends and neighbors here. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.